The Future of Teamwork is a Leader production. Subscribe today and never miss an episode.
These little skills can make a massive difference in how people see themselves and therefore how they see their work and then what they do, because when people feel that they matter, they act like they matter.
Welcome to The Future of Teamwork. My name's Dane Grunewald, and today I'm joined by Zach Mercurio. Zach's got some cool titles. He's a researcher. He's a leadership development facilitator and an author. His latest book is The Power of Mattering. And interestingly, I started 2025 with mattering as my word of the year. And then your book comes out. And as you and I was talking about pre-show, it's definitely something people don't have a lot of in their lives right now. So it seems to be popping.
Yeah, there's a couple of books that came out just this month. And I always say, yeah, when something becomes popular, you know people are not experiencing it.
Yeah,
because it hits something, you know, it hits a lived experience that people are having. And we're seeing that right now. I mean, it's coming up more and more.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, it's great to have you here, Zach. Tell us a little bit more about how you came to be doing this work. Like, where did it all, where's all this energy coming from?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all started by not experiencing meaning and mattering in a job. You know, yeah. I worked in advertising when I graduated university, and I was doing all of the right things. I mean, I had all the outward indicators of success, but I felt empty. And I saw the people around me. I mean, they would come into work every day, and really they would just talk about what happened last weekend and what was going to be happening the weekend coming up. And my brain just could not conceptualize living for 2/7 of your life, the days that began with the letter S. And so I started looking for other ways around me and talking to people, and I talked to cab drivers, bus drivers, people just around town who had jobs that seemed joyful, and I would ask them about their work. It was like an informal experiment just to give more meaning to my day. And I found something really interesting is that people who tended to really be joyful tended to talk less about what they did and how they did it, but who they did it for, you know, seeing themselves as part of this bigger whole.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I want to see that. I want to learn as much as I can about that perspective. So I ended up quitting that job. I went and studied meaningfulness and purpose and mattering in work. You can do that. Been part of some really cool research studies. Got to work with cleaners, clean buildings for a year and a half, understanding what makes work meaningful in a very tactile, difficult, often overlooked job. Got to, you know, have worked with thousands of people in multiple industries, asking them the question, when you most feel that you matter, what is happening around you. And what comes up time and time again is it's not big actions. It's the small interactions we have with one another in which we feel seen, heard, valued, and needed. And everyday interactions that help us to see how we add value, to see our purpose. And all of that sort of came together in the last 5 years when so much data shows that that has been absent for so many people, those quality interactions.
Yes.
More people feel invisible, more people feel forgotten, more people feel overlooked, just a cog in somebody else's machine. And so we say, oh, we gotta write what we've been finding, what we've been thinking about. We gotta write this so people can start relearning these skills they need to create ecosystems of mattering and meaning around them. And that's how I'm here right now. But it all starts with a moment. I mean, usually things do start with a moment of absence, of pain, of not seeing it, and then not being able to reconcile something. And that's what happened to me.
Interestingly, through your research, Zach, that story resonates, but did you see anything that indicated this has been a growing phenomenon, that more people are living that kind of life of living for the weekends only and work being more of a grind and not feeling meaning or mattering?
Yeah, I mean, I think the pandemic, you know, a lot of people talked about the pandemic. My friend remarked about it as it was starting. He's like, this feels apocalyptic. And so I went and looked up the root word of apocalypse, which means to reveal. And I think the pandemic revealed our yearning for mattering and how that's been depleted over really the last 50 years of industrialization and reducing us to small parts of a bigger whole without seeing the impact that we make or just mere means to an end. I think people who were on a hamster wheel finally had some time to realize they were on one. And they started asking questions like, why me? Why am I spending my time doing what I'm doing? There's also something called in philosophy called the death nudge, where when we become more aware of our mortality through our interconnectivity, we can see wars on the other side of the world on our, in our palm of our hand now. When we become more aware of our mortality, these events tend to prompt us to seek more meaning and purpose.
Interesting.
And so there's this, been this collective, you know, a lot of philosophers are talking about this collective awareness of our own mortality that signals to us to ask that question. What am I doing? Why am I spending the time I'm spending where I'm spending it? How do I feel in the communities around me?
Yeah.
And since 2020 to 2025, there's several data points that are disturbing. I mean, just about 30% of people in one work human study self-reported that they felt, quote unquote, invisible at work, flat out ignored. Gallup, who's been measuring engagement, which is really just caring about what you're doing and who you're doing it with. But Gallup's been measuring engagement for years, right? And it was at the lowest rate it's been in a decade in 2025.
Yeah.
Now this is despite TED Talks, books, well-being programs, DEI programs, perks, wage increases, more benefits than ever. We've thrown everything at this. But there's a data point in there that's very concerning. And the data point was that just 39% of people in that sample could strongly agree that someone at work cared for them as a person.
Yeah.
That's the lowest that's ever been. Just 30% said that someone saw and invested in their unique potential. So what we're seeing is that these aren't programmatic issues. They can't be solved through a perk or pay increase. They're interactional issues. So people are having poor quality interactions at a time where they're seeking meaning and mattering more than ever. And this is resulting in really, you know, a mattering deficit, a crisis of mattering that is affecting well-being, causing people to withdraw, withhold, or act out in desperation in toxic ways.
Yeah,
to get the attention that they're not getting in their communities and workplaces and relationships around them.
No, that makes sense. And it resonates, and it hurts when you really pause and think about feeling invisible or not feeling cared for. It's interesting, some research that we've been looking into, and one of my mentors, Dr. Ian McDonald, who works with systems leadership theory, he's talking about love instead of caring. And he actually thinks there's a meaningful difference in actually having love in our teams, in our communities, because caring can be, it's not that it can be put on, but it's, caring is more of an act of doing something for someone else. Love is more like, how would I want my child to feel if they were in that same situation? How would I like them to be looked after? And there is a difference.
Yeah. When you look at the research on what makes a high quality interaction,
yeah,
there's a concept called companionate love that psychologists have identified. We often think of love, we think of passionate love.
Yes.
Like romantic love, which is why love gets sort of like normed out of work conversations.
Yeah.
But companionate love is experiencing the behaviors of attention, of attunement, someone's attuned to you and your voice, of compassion, somebody regularly shows up for you and helps alleviate your struggle, and affirmation, like somebody knows and invests in your uniqueness and really honors that uniqueness. And so I like that term, companionate love, and that idea of love in that realm. But when you look at those two things, one of the things that we found is that this meta need, like it's almost impossible to experience love without feeling that you matter to the person, without feeling seen, heard, valued, and needed. I mean, there's research that's been done on like, that finds that it's almost impossible to be in a healthy, satisfied relationship in which you don't feel seen, heard, valued, and needed by the other person.
Yeah.
And so I think mattering, this, I love this intersection right now that we're exploring of mattering and love, how mattering is a key mechanism for this companionate love.
Yeah.
I will say something. I think there's a difference between caring about people and caring for them, though.
Yes.
So I think caring about is what we typically think when we think about care. Like, I care about my people. Well, that's easy. That's a sentiment. That can be performative. It's like writing,
yes,
our people are our greatest asset when you list them as an expense in your P&L sheet, right?
100%.
But caring for somebody, I think, requires love, because to care for something, whether it's a house plant or a pet, or a car, or a person, to care for something means you have to understand it.
Yes.
Like, if you're caring for a plant, you have to understand what kind of light it needs, how much water it needs. understanding takes time. It takes intention. It takes listening. It takes all of those attributes of companionate love. So I think it's important to distinguish care from caring about and caring for.
Well, I like that definition.
Very hard 100%. To also care for something you don't love.
Correct. Yeah. As I've found with a lot of plants in my life.
Very hard. But you can't shortcut. You have a nice one behind you.
It's dead. But there's plastic.
But there's no shortcut. This is what brings us to where we are. There's no shortcut. I mean, you can't care for someone if you're in a hurry, if you're not paying attention to them, if you don't notice anything about them, if you don't know what their interests are. And here we are in a place where our attention spans have decreased significantly, in which we have more pulling us away from the person and the task in front of us than ever. And in a time where we've simply lost a lot of the skills to seek understanding and pay attention to other people and care for them. So all this to say, I like the word love. This idea of companionate love is interesting. A key mechanism of that is making sure we're seeing, hearing, valuing another person. I think that's one of the ways we express love.
And a couple of times there, Zach, I noted it down. I've come across seen, heard, valued a lot. But seen, heard, valued, and needed. Tell me a bit more of the and needed.
When we interview people and we really ask them, when's the most you've ever felt that you mattered in your life? Many say, when someone relied on me. Mm-hmm. When I became a caretaker, when I became a parent, when I was needed to step up and solve this problem. There's something amazing that happens to human beings when they're needed. You know, this something amazing that happens with our minds, our bodies. We get a release of dopamine, serotonin, and oxytocin when we see someone in need and we have something we can do to help. And those neurochemicals control for mood, movement, and motivation. It's almost like our interdependence is what optimizes us. We are like our best when we're interdependent, when we're needed by others. And that idea that our presence and our absence means something to just one other person.
Yeah.
Is almost what it means to be alive, what it means to be a person. Now, on the other side of that, when researchers have studied, for example, thoughts of depression or suicidal ideation or things like that, what are the common traits? There was a study done. They looked at millions of Reddit subposts, and they were trying to do some language modeling to see what common language people were used who are really having these dark thoughts about themselves and self-hatred. And the most common phrase that researchers find came up is, nobody would miss me if I was gone.
Well,
no one relies on me. No one needs me.
Yeah.
So the dark double-edged sword of that is when we feel unneeded, when we feel replaceable, when we feel like just a means to someone else's end, when a manager tells us, don't forget everybody's replaceable at work. These are things that like hit at a very core instinct that we need to be needed.
Yeah.
And it can result in very profound stress, anxiety, burnout, lack of self-compassion, self-hatred, because why bother?
I can see that, actually. And the more you talk about it, I've read into a lot of papers around identity. And a lot of them will frame identity as, you know, you need to know who you're serving. You talked about earlier, and that you build a lot of your identity around that. So when people retire, for example, or when the kids move out of home, or when they sell their business, they have these big identity crises because all of a sudden they're not needed in the way that they were needed by those people.
Right, right. And you know, there's such thing as needing to matter too much as well. I mean, you can weaponize this need to feel needed, and that's termed codependence. And that's a really destructive relationship type. When somebody makes you feel bad, it makes you feel that their well-being hinges upon you doing something. That's manipulation. That's not the kind of being needed I'm talking about. I'm talking about being able to see and know how your presence and absence mean something to others, how your unique strengths, gifts, your voice, your perspective, your wisdom is valued and adds value in a group or in a community. And, you know, one of the you know, some of the five most powerful words that we've heard interviewers say that they hear when they experience mattering in their lives is some version of "if it wasn't for you."
Hey, you know,
if it wasn't for you, this wouldn't have been possible. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be here right now. And oftentimes one of the things that gets in the way is like, if I asked everybody here to think about someone that they rely on in their community, in their family, in their workplace, and then I asked everybody here to think about the last time you explicitly told them, there's often this gap.
Yeah.
But yet that experience is so foundational to being a human.
Yeah. It actually ties me back. I don't know if you've come across Chris Shembra, the gratitude guru.
No, I haven't.
So he does these dinners, and that's the one question he asks the guests around the table. You know, what's the one person who's who you haven't thanked for their role in your life? And it brings up a lot of emotions, and it creates gratitude, because in his research and studies, the true driver of gratitude is if you do something that would create inconvenience for yourself to serve another.
Mm. You know, I once had a coach who told me, who had noticed something about me, like, and I didn't notice it in myself. And he told me, you can't read the label when you're inside the jar. And what I love about that quip was that when we show gratitude for another person, when we illuminate their like gifts, their strengths, their talents, the impact that they make on us, we're actually many times reflecting back to someone, something that they don't see in themselves.
They can't see it.
Think about how often you get up every day and think about your gifts and your strengths and the difference that you made, like as you start the day. I know for me, like I start the day, like, how am I going to get through the day? What do I have to do today? How am I, right? What kind of value am I going to add today? It takes others to reveal those things to us. The mechanism of mattering, of feeling significant, is what's called reflected appraisals. This is the mechanism psychology. These are when someone reflects something back to you and then you start interpreting it and internalizing it as a belief. You know, the average of the reflected appraisals we get tend to determine our self-concept, which is what we believe about ourselves.
Yeah.
This is important because we are that other for others. So what are the signals that you're sending to others that are adding to or detracting from the belief that they matter?
That's fascinating. And going back to your earlier point there, Zach, on like the 50 years of the industrial era, kind of breaking us down into smaller and smaller units of production, we interface with and matter to a far smaller subset of people.
Yes.
And so when you think about that, and you mentioned the word an ecosystem of mattering, we've almost like broken down the connections. There's all these little subgroups, but it's not flowing, you know, allowing people to be told, you know, that if it wasn't for you, this would have happened, and to kind of create that network effect.
This is why I do a lot of work with leaders, because leaders can be architects of meaning, because a leader can reveal the downstream impact someone has 3, 4, 5 steps removed from them back to the person. There's a Scottish theologian, his name is Oswald Chambers. He wrote, "A river's source knows nothing of where it leads."
Mm.
And I love that imagery, because I think that we can reveal the impact back to its source.
Yeah.
If we're deliberate and skillful in doing that. And part of affirming people, which is showing them how their uniqueness makes a unique difference, is helping them see that bigger impact. Because we have to understand how we got here, and I think you're right, and I'm glad you re-brought up the industrial age, because, you know, all work was purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
Work was always an act of community. I mean, if I was a shoemaker, I made shoes so you didn't have to walk around barefoot.
Yes.
But what happened is someone developed a factory where they had more money, they had an excess of money, so now they could say, hey, Dane, why don't you come in and just make the sole of the shoe, and I'll pay you, I'll compensate you for the meaning that you've lost. I'll give you enough money so you can go home and survive, and then your survival is hinged on me, so work as exchange. So I'll give you enough that you can go have this life. You come in, you just make this part, and that's it, and you leave. And really, in a very simple sense, that's how we've been operating ever since, work as exchange.
That's scary.
I mean, the actual word compensation, compensate means to make up for.
to make up for the loss of purpose. Like, I've never heard it framed that
make
way.
Up, when... Like, I'm compensating you for you're losing something, and you're losing this purpose. You're giving me your skills. You're giving me your time. So here's something to fill it in so you go home and we can keep the system running. I mean, it's work as exchange. I mean, and it really happened when our technology was able to, in the agricultural era, when our technology enabled us to build fences, to build things to store excess food. And then someone was like, ooh, I can trade this excess food. And that person became an administrator, right?
Yeah.
I can administer this. I have this money. Now, if I have this money, now I can just pay people to come and suffer more and be okay with it to go home. And then their livelihood's connected to me paying them. And here we are. I mean, really.
Yeah. And it served for a period of time because that exchange meant that you had a better quality of life. But then you go past that marginal point of return where you start to go over the hill and you're on the downward slide.
Yeah, and then we transitioned to the technology of the information age, where then we had so much extra excess that we needed people to analyze it. So we have analysts and accountants, right? And we have this big information age where now the commodity is information. So whoever has the most information gets paid the most. But now we're in this place where this thing called artificial intelligence can now generate the information, share the information faster than we ever could. And so what do we have to go back to? Well, now we're going back to the relational and purposeful model because it's all we have. So like before all of this, work was purposeful and it was relational. You know, you went out and did hunting and gathering with other people for other people. You made shoes with other people for other people. You farmed with other people for other people. Then we started workers exchange. Then we got into the information age, the technology age, and here we are. And Manoush Shafiq, she used to be a president, I believe, of Colombia. She said, you know, in the past, work was about bronze, muscle. And now it's going to be about heart again.
Oh, I love that. It's so interesting. So I'm a surfer, and this morning I went for a coffee with my wife and I went down to the local cafe where the board shop is, and Jerry Lopez, famous, like I idolize the guy. He's just there at the desk working with this kid who sadly may not have even known who he was talking to, taking in some shapes that he's going to go away and shape for customers he'll never meet. And I felt a sadness just being like, oh my gosh, that's Jerry Lopez. And oh my God, the guys who are going to get his boards aren't even going to get the chance to talk to him about the shape. Wow. And so I can, that whole theme that you're talking about around relational and purposeful work.
Yeah.
It is so human.
And I think we're returning to that. And I think it's by necessity because, you know, AI can do our tasks. It can't take moral responsibility for them.
Yeah.
You know, AI can't care for us. AI can't love us.
No.
It doesn't, like, AI could, like, script this conversation, but it can't take responsibility for what we say and its impact on other people. So only humans can create human, caring, loving, trusting relationship with other humans.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, Zach, I'm worried that I'll be replaced by AI. I'm like, you'll only be replaced by AI if you cease to be able to create caring, loving, trusting human relationships.
Yeah.
This is why the World Economic Forum and their most in-demand skills by 2030, things like empathy, active listening, compassion, curiosity, all made the list. Technological literacy is now 10th.
Isn't that
wild? The most in-demand skill. Why is that? Well, because AI is necessitating us to return to what makes us human. But here's the kicker is that we're actually worse at it than ever.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
We've lost these skills to do it. And this work of rebuilding and upskilling our essential human skills to see, hear, value, show people how they're needed is more important than ever. It's an imperative in my view.
Totally. It's interesting you chose the word community earlier too. You said all work was purposeful. We were serving the community. And you and I pre-show were talking about the podcast Adam Grant did with Daniel Coyle, who wrote Flourishing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Coyle in that podcast suggests that the definition of community is to share gifts. So you don't build community, you share gifts, and the community creates around the sharing of gifts. And that just went pop. And what you're talking about is doing the same thing. It's like, hey, if we can get back to heart and seeing, valuing, understanding, hearing, giving to the people around us so that we can care for them, then that's going to be the solution or the rebuild.
Yeah, I love that. And I would add that for people to share their gifts in community, they first have to believe that they have them.
So where's the gap there?
People to contribute, they first have to believe they're worthy of contributing.
Yes.
And that's why I think going back to what I talked about, like we are that other for others, reflecting back to people who they truly are, is people have to feel that they matter. They have to feel significant to act that way. I mean, when people feel, you know, seen, heard, and valued by those around them and needed, they develop two beliefs: self-esteem, the belief that I'm worthy of being in this community.
Yeah.
And self-efficacy, the belief that I'm capable of adding value here. And when people develop self-esteem and self-efficacy, they develop more confidence needed to give their gifts to add value, the more they feel valued. And that's the upward spiral, right?
Yes.
In ecosystems of mattering. However, you know, if you tell someone to contribute, maybe they're in a workplace every day where they're giving evidence of their insignificance every day and they believe that they're insignificant. Very hard to tell someone to engage.
100%.
It's very hard to sell someone to care if they don't feel cared for.
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard. Like disengagement, for example, everybody talks about engagement. Disengagement is not a signal of apathy.
Yes.
Right? It's a signal of self-protection.
Yes.
So like I've been putting forth this effort. Nobody sees me. So I'm going to protect my energy. I've been sharing my voice, but nobody hears me. So I'm going to protect my dignity. I'm just going to withdraw. So we need to solve that first. I mean, at the same time, to build true communities, we need to be rebuilding these relationships of mattering that reaffirm people's belief that they're worthy and the belief that they're capable so that they can go share their gifts, which I believe is community. I would also add something to that too. All like work really is creative relationships.
Yes.
I mean, we're creating something together. And I've been loving seeing that lately as like these are creative relationships. But too often there's relationships in work that are characterized by power over, by that work as exchange.
Yeah.
What are you going to do for me relationships versus creative like co-relationships, which I think Coyle's also talking about when it comes to community.
Yeah. So with that, that kind of takes me back to your point on the leaders as the architect of meaning. Because if people don't feel like they have that self-efficacy and the leader a few levels above them in the organization can bring that to life one-to-one, and I would assume publicly, is that one of those sparks that we need more organizations to be bringing forward?
I think so. I mean, I would also add that some people say to me, look, Zach, what if my leader doesn't do this for me?
Yeah, yeah.
And I always say, like, do you do it for them? So this stuff, like culture, is non-directional. Culture isn't bestowed on us from above magically.
Yeah.
It is constructed through every interaction we have. I mean, I see culture and community, the quality of cultures and communities, as directly proportionate to the quality of everyday interactions.
Yes.
On average.
Yep.
And so one of the things I think is a spark is when a leader says, okay, I am going to choose the type of interactions I have on this team, and I'm going to model those. And when I interact with people, I'm going to make sure that I'm reflecting back to them that they are seen.
Yeah.
That I notice them. I notice the details about them as a person, about their lives and their work, that they are heard. I take an interest in the meaning behind the words, the feeling behind the words.
Yeah.
What they're really experiencing. I affirm them. I commit to illuminating those unique gifts that they may not see. And then I commit to showing them how they're needed, that downstream impact of the work.
Yeah.
And so that spark of being able to choose to model and design interactions in that way, and then expect it of all the people on your team, is a major spark.
Yes.
And let me say, it is not hard to do. So, I mean, you can completely open up a relationship with somebody that you've maybe never had before. If you can say stop and say, hey, I just want to let you know, if it wasn't for you, like what we did, what I did this afternoon wouldn't be possible. I just have been thinking about that. And I know I've never told you that, but I want to show you that. I mean, we've found that those moments of mattering have formative power on people's careers and their lives and how they see themselves in these small moments.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Actually, it makes me just pause and reflect on all the people that I haven't said that to and think.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah. I mean, just imagine it's easy to kind of put your head in the sand and not go back to a relationship. Hey, we were working together. We're no longer working together. And you don't really know how to reconnect, because in that time that you had a relationship, it was so much about the work that you were doing and not about the people you were or how you really helped each other. It was more about, in fact, the outcomes you achieved together. Mm. And so that there's a sadness that I think comes with that when you're like, I don't really know how to go back and connect. And your point of just saying, if it wasn't for you, that's how you do it. That it's just that one simple.
Yeah. Reflection. So I love how you said that. I love how you said, I don't know how to go back and connect.
Yeah.
Okay? The how is good, because that means it's something we can learn to do. We can learn how to do that again.
Yes.
You know, and one of the things I think we all have to grapple with is our skills to do this for all of us have decayed over the last 25 years since humans sent their first text messages in December 1993.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so, you know, if you, Dane, give me some bad news, I can just give you a thumbs down emoji, say, oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
On Slack or Teams or whatever platform we're using or text. And then I think I've done my moral duty. That's great for efficiency, right? But what we have lost, and what a lot of even social psychologists who are telling us to put down our phones have lost, is that every time I do that, I get out of the social repetition, social reps, they're called, social situation, in which I have to seek understanding, show compassion, see how you're doing. And think about this. In psychology, there's this concept called skill decay.
Yeah.
And it finds that a cognitive or social skill can decay within about 4 days starting of not using it.
Wow.
So if I get out of that situation of showing compassion for you, or say it's good news, say you do something good on a project, I give you a thumbs up on Slack, say good job, and I don't have to say how I'm proud of you and what I've noticed in you. Every time I get out of that, I lose the skill to do it.
Yeah.
Now, go back to your last 10 years and think about how many social repetitions of building those skills you and I have missed out on. I mean, there's probably people leading people right now on Teams that haven't had to show compassion to another person in real time in 5 years.
Yeah, that's so sad.
So how do we do this? Well, I think it's acknowledged we have to relearn these things. It's uncomfortable because there's usually an ability thing. So like even that technique of if it wasn't for you, or using that language, or, you know, asking a better question to somebody instead of how are you? How's it going? How's your day going? Asking, you know, what is your attention today? What have you been struggling with? How can I help? Like going one layer deeper than the greetings. These little skills can make a massive difference in how people see themselves and therefore how they see their work. And then what they do, because when people feel that they matter, they act like they matter.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite quotes of yours.
Yeah, I say it all the time. I mean, there's two things. It's almost impossible for anything to matter to somebody who doesn't first believe that they matter.
Yeah.
And then when people feel that they matter, they act like it. I mean, they show up, they commit, they in relationships, in work. But it's very hard. It's like very hard to continue caring about work or something or someone if you don't feel cared for.
Yeah. No, it's, and I think it's just such a good reminder. So I think what you've just discussed there works really well in a team within an organization, because we can talk about how we're going to behave. I love the topic that culture is non-directional, you know, it can come from anywhere. So in our work teams, there's a way to do this, but think about our teams outside of the workplace. You know, it might be a church group, a rugby club, a PTA organization. How do you see it showing up differently? Or are there, you know, particular areas that members of those teams can be thinking about bringing this mattering to life?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, the only reason why I wrote this book, like, and did this work directed towards leaders in organizations is because they needed a target market for me.
Yeah.
But
that sounds right.
Literally. But this is all, I mean, I could have wrote this book about any interpersonal relationship you have. Mm-hmm. I mean, so think about this question. When you most feel that you matter to others, what are they doing? And what we've found is that there's three elements of interactions that matter, that create a sense of mattering. One, when you feel noticed. So what this means is that you have to be a noticer. Like, notice is feeling seen and heard. We talked a little bit about that. We also feel that we matter when we feel affirmed. Hmm. Not just appreciated or recognized. Appreciation is when someone shows you gratitude for who you are, right? You can do that in an event, free meal or an award. Recognition is showing gratitude for what you do, but affirmation is showing you how only you could have done it.
Yes.
Affirmation is revealing someone's uniqueness and then showing them how they make a unique difference. And then the third is helping them feel needed. So I think as you're going through your relationships every day, whether it's in a church group or on a team, the question becomes am I making sure that people I interact with on a daily basis feel noticed, affirmed, and needed? I mean, one of the best ways to start, for example, is, and I have worked with coaches for some high-level athletic teams on this, is when you're saying thank you or good job to somebody, which we all do in all the different teams in our lives, right? We say thank you or thanks for that. Thank you, you know, right? But as humans, we have a desperate need for uniqueness relative to others. So generic praise or generic thank yous don't work really well in terms of improving our well-being or self-concept. But what does work is that anytime you say thank you, for example, just describe exactly when and where whatever you're thanking them for happened. So describe the setting. That helps you become a noticer. Then name the behavior very specifically. Hey, like, you know, I noticed at the beginning of this podcast, you were very open body language and you were very, like, deeply interested in what I was doing and working on and what was exciting to me. But then name their gifts. So humans bring us four gifts in every community and team. The first is they bring us their strengths, what they love and what they're good at. They bring us their perspective, how only they see the world. Yeah. They bring us their wisdom, what only they can teach us. And they bring us their purpose, what's missed when they're gone, the unique impact on the group. So you could say, hey, I really noticed that, you know, you're incredibly intentional and you want to create a really welcoming space for the group, right? So I acknowledged your intentionality. But then finally, show them the impact that it had on you. Mm. You know, and this is what it enabled us to do. Like if I was able to be more comfortable on this podcast and someone took one thing away and are going to go use that to make someone feel that they matter, that's because of you and your presence and intentionality, Dane. You know, so thank you.
Yeah.
So setting, behavior, gifts, impact in some way go beyond the thank you. And really name, I see your gifts, I see your strengths, I see this, here's the difference that I make, and watch what happens. I mean, that's just one small way you can cultivate this in your communities.
I love that. And I love acronyms, so I'm going to bring NAN.
I don't know what the acronym is. Yeah, oh, NAN is a good acronym.
I'm bringing NAN because, you know, when you think about a grandmother, a grandfather, often they had those skills. And sadly, we haven't seen a lot of those skills recently.
You know, I was reflecting on that. My grandmother, my late grandmother, when I played soccer growing up, and she knew my soccer schedule better than I did.
Yeah.
So I would call and she'd be like, oh, I saw you had a game on Saturday. And I'm like, how did you know that? Well, she wrote it down. And this it's very interesting that you bring this up because it goes back to that experience of being loved. I mean, you can't be loved without being known.
Yes.
And being remembered. There's something about being remembered, too, that shows up in our research. But it took grandma some practice and skill to write it down. She probably had a calendar. She probably had a tool. She brought it from this common sense idea that I should do this to a common practice. And I think that that's what we're seeing across teams and leaders is you bringing this common sense idea of love, of showing people how they matter, and making sure it becomes a common practice that's as rigorously pursued as our operational goals or financial metrics or whatever it is. But I'm glad you brought that up because a lot of people will say, oh, well, I have this person who does this for me. She's just amazing. She's just good with people. But I'm like, no, they do. They're doing something. They have a skill. Yes. They have a practice.
It's the how again.
It's the how. And we can relearn how to do those things. And I think that that's where we need to go.
That's neat. Another acronym that came to mind, I wrote it down when you were sharing how to give the feedback, is TSP, truthful, specific, and positive. And it's also the short for teaspoon, So one of my friends, Michael Alosso, who brought that forward to me, was saying, the nice thing about this is it, you can give it in teaspoons. It's a small thing to do. And if you can do it regularly, it lands in the team. So I think it's a great practice and like visual for leaders to be like, hey, have I given out many teaspoons today?
Yeah, that's good. And just in your just start in your life, like your delivery driver, if you get a package today, don't wait for them to leave the porch. Open the door and just say, hey, you've come here. I haven't caught your name. How's your day going? And watch what happens. Like watch what happens to you and watch what happens to them. And like, I mean, these are the smallest acts that when we study on what helps people feel that they matter in life, it's these smallest acts of being seen.
Which answers that early question perfectly, that you don't need a leader or an organizational playbook to do this. You can bring it on your front porch.
No app, no platform, no program, no new operating system in your organization. No. You don't have to buy anything to do this.
Brilliant.
This is all about, well, but you do have to name it. You have to be able to name these skills.
Yes.
And one of the things we've been doing is codifying, you know, these 25 plus skills to create mattering centered relationships. And I can send that to you if you're
going
to add
we'll
your notes.
Link it to the show notes.
I think it's just really helpful to name these things, because if you can't name these things, they often get relegated to common sense or intuition, or we just trust people to just be a good person. As many people know here, intuition doesn't scale very well in our lives, right? Habit, practice. We've talked about this, discipline scales.
Yeah.
The same is true with our relationships. I mean, we have to approach relationships skillfully. And so being able to name them is important. And then being able to just assess yourself, just really quickly say, how frequently am I doing these things? Like even that, like think about someone you're grateful for. When's the last time you told them? Who's someone you need to notice more? Who's someone you're underseeing? Who's someone you need to check in on? Is there a conversation last week that you know someone's frustrated that you need to follow up on? After you listen to this podcast, give them a call. So I was thinking about the conversation we had. I noticed you're frustrated. Is that right? Watch what happens to your relationship.
Yeah.
Who do you need to show how they rely on? Will you say, hey, I just want to let you know if it wasn't for you? It's bringing these things from common sense to common practice that is critical, and not just relegating them to intuition or I'll just do it. I'm a good person. It takes skill and practice and attention and intention.
Yeah. No, that's wonderful. And I'm so energized from this conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to walk us through it today, Zach. And I love that, common sense to common practice. I think that's it really is that skills decay that you touched on today. It's where we've all got a role to play, regardless of our role on a team or how many teams we're on. We can bring it everywhere.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think that, you know, if you're thinking about one way to sort of wrap it all up, that what you've learned today or thinking about is asking people in any relationship that you have, really, when you feel that you matter to me, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And just write some things down that they say and commit to doing more of those things, because, you know, models only go so far. Research studies only go so far. We know most people want to feel noticed, affirmed, and needed, but we don't know how your people want to feel noticed, affirmed, and needed.
I love that.
And ask them, and you'll be very surprised, I think, with what they say. Usually it's very small moments that you probably overlooked, but they may be nothing to you right now, but they're everything to that other person.
Yeah. And that's very cool, too, because you've created, going back to interrelational power, you've made it an interactive thing. It's not like, here's my playbook, I'm going to be Nan and write the schedule down. You actually have to interact
and
to
be building. That's the danger, right? I mean,
yeah.
You know, you could be performative about this and turn this into a system, turn this into another thing to do.
Yeah.
You have to really always just gut check yourself of, I'm doing this because I'm deeply interested in this person.
Yeah. That's sick. That's so powerful. So encouraging. So I'm stoked that we've had the time to talk about it. I'm going to have to go and make sense of all of the notes I've been scribbling down. And I can't wait to re-listen to this episode. So for all of those listeners out there that get the value that I'm getting from the conversation, Zach, how do they find you, your materials, your book?
Yeah, I mean, I would say the best place to start is to go to zachmercurio.com/mattering. And it's like a Mattering hub there. And there's, you could download the 25 skills as well there. But then there's a self-assessment. There's like a template for how to give better gratitude, for how to say if it wasn't for you. And you don't need to enter your email or anything. You just download them and use them. And then if you like that stuff, you can check out the book.
Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I've had a blast. I look forward to catching up again soon.
Yeah. Thanks, Dean.
Thanks, Zach.
Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, the Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with. It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on the Future of Teamwork.